Hello, welcome back. We've got another episode of Off the Chain for you today. Dave and I are very, very, very excited because we're joined today by our best guest yet, Amy Lee Scott.
Hey guys,
Hey, Amy.
Welcome, Amy.
Can I just tell you real quick, Steele, how I became friends with Amy?
Please.
I don't know exactly how to categorize that, but she invited me to go with her to see David Sedaris live, and I was totally on board. It was terrific, but there has to be some sort of nerdy category for people that really want to see David Sedaris read stories live, because that's the category we were in.
Yeah, and I definitely peed my pants at that show. It
Dave told me he
was
peed his pants on the way to that show, but it was unrelated to laughter.
Exactly.
But yeah, me and Nate, we're still friends. What, like a decade later, Amy? I don't
Yeah.
know.
And I met Steele in an English class. I
That's
don't remember
correct.
exactly which one it was,
Nor do I.
but I
I was just
can
gonna say, I was gonna
yeah,
ask
I
you
just
which
remember we
class it
met in
was.
English class.
Yeah, not as cool.
We'll work on a better story than that.
Sure. Well, I'll
But
add
just cut
something
that out. Just cut
Yeah.
that out
Just
entirely.
cut
Don't
that.
even mention it. Come on.
But in any case, we are joined by our best guest yet. Amy, we're so happy to have you. We're going to start by talking about some of our favorite picture books. I think Dave's probably the team leader on this one.
Yeah, I'm all over it still. This is my corner in life, pretty much.
I have a little bit of expertise, and Amy, it sounds like you'll be needing this information in your recent future.
Oh yeah. So we're gonna have a baby and I need to get back into the picture book thing. I used to only read picture books like well through middle school, so I feel like I have a really good grasp on the topic. But there's some
Great.
new ones that came out that sound really good.
We're going to have a special segment of small talk where we help you in your next awkward conversation, have something to talk about. We've got a very exciting segment of Ask Off the Chain with some great user-submitted questions. We've got, of course, Unchained Melodies and Book Wisdom. We're really excited for that. Amy was a former college radio station DJ, so her selections will shame both Dave and
Wow.
I.
Yeah. I was on the 6 a.m. shift. They
Oh,
really
shit.
loved me.
Yeah. I don't know, what's the 6 a.m. jam in a college market?
I honestly don't know who was listening. I think Spencer tuned in from out of state, and that was about it.
Yeah, 6 a.m. radio for me, that's more of a, I tune into sports talk at that time, Amy.
Yeah.
I'm not listening to college radio.
No, there's a lot of competition for that
Yeah.
slot.
Yeah.
Well, Dave, let's talk picture books. Educate us.
Okay. I'm excited about this. I like to draw. I love illustration. And there's just something about a good picture book. When you open it, you're reading it. I can tell within like a page or two if this book is magical or not. I just get really excited. And my girls right now, they're 2 years old, so they'll read the same book over and over again. So it has to be a good book, otherwise I can't handle it. There's just something a good writer and illustrator when they work together, and usually I like them to be the same person. There's just something magical. Like as soon as you read the book, you know, like this is terrific.
So, Dave, how do we define picture book?
Essentially, it's where the pictures are really driving the story. There's
Okay.
obviously words on the page, and those are important to the story, but really, I want my girls to basically be able to understand the story by just looking at the pictures.
Okay. So I have to say, from my childhood, when I think back, the thing that defines the picture book for me is probably Richard Scarry. Did you guys read Richard Scarry?
Oh yeah, big time.
Yeah.
The cats and the worm, and I don't remember all the other animals.
The lion was my favorite Richard Scarry character.
Yeah. And this is one I'm especially excited about because Cedar's favorite book right now is just a colorful picture book that has kind of cartoon drawings of animals with animal sounds. So we just turn the page and make animal sounds. And the
That's awesome.
lion is the best character because when we first would do it, I would roar really loud and he would just start crying. It used to terrify me. But I didn't stop doing it. I just kept doing it, and soon the tears turned to laughter. And now, when the book comes down, he starts grinning, and when it turns to the page of the lion, he's so excited. He looks up at me. He's just like, his eyes light up, and that's the only sound that he'll do on demand. He can roar now. He'll roar. He'll do the lion's
So
roar.
like
So it's amazing.
parenting through fear conditioning. I like that.
Yeah, that's my strategy. Turn that fear, that weakness into a strength.
But that's awesome. When the kid is actually getting involved with the book and is following it and is excited when you're turning the page because they know what's coming. We've got this one that's it's an old Berenstain Bear book. It's
Yes.
called Old Hat, New Hat. It's fantastic. He goes to a hat store and he wants to find a new hat that he likes, and he really struggles with it until the very end. There's a page where he holds up his hand and he says, "Wait," really loud because he's found what he wants. All three of my girls, when we get to that page, they just say, "Wait!"
Dave, do your girls each have a separate favorite book, or do they kind of like latch onto one that they're like, this is the best book of all time?
It goes through phases. One author I really wanted to talk about was Peggy Rathman. She's probably my favorite, but she wrote Goodnight Gorilla and illustrated it. Have you guys seen that?
Yeah,
No?
those are great books, yeah.
I love it. But that's probably Elsie's favorite book, and we'll just go through and she'll show me where the balloon is, and I just love it. It's magical. It's adorable. The gorilla gets out of the zoo and lets all of his friends out, and they go to the zookeeper's house to sleep. And I read about Peggy Rathman. She takes years to illustrate these books. It's not like she does it in a month or two. She'll work on these books for years until she gets the illustrations exactly how she wants them to be. But Elsie, that's her top book, and probably mine too.
How about for you, Amy? Do you have favorites?
Yeah, I remember reading. We had a bunch of books from the 70s from my older siblings, so they're all kind of like moralistic, but those morals have stayed with me. And one of them was this one that was kind of related to Stranger Danger, but it was also a scratch and sniff book. So
What?
I can't remember the title of it, but at some point there's like trolls and they're eating grapes, so you scratch the grapes and they smell like horrible grape markers, you know? So I love those 70s ones, but one of my favorite ones was Miss Nelson is Missing. Did you guys ever read that one?
I loved
Yes.
that book. I loved it.
Yeah, and that I think instilled in me the desire to become a teacher because she was just so sneaky, like turning into Miss Viola Swamp. Brilliant, right? All those naughty kids, she whipped them back into shape, and I was just like, this lady is magical. And it was also traumatizing because I went to school sometimes just afraid Miss Viola Swamp would show up if we were being a bad class. So that book really worked on me to behave in elementary school.
I'm telling you, fear is a powerful, like you're saying, conditioning through
It
fear. It's the method of education, it's the method of parenting, sadly.
is. But we literally we ha I have the book on my shelf right now because we just got it from the library. Just to let you know, two might be a little bit young for it. They didn't really follow what was happening. I tried to point out the wig and the dress in the closet, like, "Look, guys," but they didn't quite connect the dots.
I was going to And have you
say,
guys read, one of my favorite newer children's book is called An Awesome Book by Dallas Clayton.
I don't know it, no.
And I thought of you guys all in Awesome City because it's literally a book about how awesome the world is. And the illustrations, he did them himself. But it's just like this gloriously fun book. And it's all about embracing your awesome side because the world's amazing, so you're capable of doing these amazing things. I would highly, highly recommend it if you guys haven't read it yet.
That sounds great, Amy. What was the author's name?
It's Dallas Clayton.
Okay, I definitely want to check that one out. I was thinking for myself, still most of the picture books that I really love were ones from my own childhood. So the one that I really loved was an Oscar Wilde story called The Selfish Giant. It's a story of a really grumpy giant who builds a wall, doesn't want any kids to play in his garden. And winter comes and stays there forever because there's no kids. And then one day, spring has come to his garden, and he's so thrilled, and he runs outside, and he realizes it's because there's a hole in the wall and all these kids snuck in. So he goes out, and all the kids run away because they realize he's this selfish giant, except for one kid who's crying. His eyes are filled with tears, and he can't see the giant. The giant runs up to him, and the kid wants to play in the tree, and the giant puts him up in the tree, and the kid says, "Thank you," and then all the other kids come back. and it's spring there forever. And the giant's like a nice guy. And then at the end of the story, the giant dies, and the kid that he helped up in the tree is Jesus. And he says, you know, you let me play in your garden. Today you can come and play in my garden. And then the next day the kids find the giant dead under the tree covered with blossoms.
Oh my goodness. Wait, so was this a children's book when Oscar Wilde was writing it, or was it like adapted to a children's book later, like with illustrations?
That's a great question. I don't think he wrote it like as a children's book. I think it was a children's story, and then the illustrations would have come much later.
Okay. But the giant covered in blossoms dead at the foot of the tree sounds kind of Victorian.
Doesn't it? Yeah. A little over the top.
Yeah, that took a rough turn.
It is. That's discussing real issues.
Man, it made me cry. I was like, that Jesus is great. I mean, he wasn't named Jesus in the story, but, you know, that's the lens I viewed it through.
I read one of the original Curious George books this week with my girls. And, you know, it's going along good. George is washing windows, gets in a little bit of trouble. You know, he goes into one of the apartments and he paints it, and he wasn't supposed to. And they chase after him, so he falls down, he breaks his leg. I'm like, this kind of stings. He's in the hospital. But good news, he's recovering fast. He recovers quick enough to where he can get curious inside the hospital. And there's one thing he gets really curious about. It's a bottle of ether.
Oh, my gosh. Is there like a skull and crossbones on the bottle picture?
No. I think it's just played for comedic effect, because he gets knocked unconscious by the ether, and they have to throw him into the shower to wake him up.
Are there other like wandering hobos on the ward that are like long term ether addicts?
Does he find a syringe somewhere and like?
There's like a little drawing of Curious George with X's for eyes, you know, little
that
bubbles above
George,
his head.
He's too curious.
Yeah, so some of those old children's stories are really good, and you got to be careful. You're just reading along, and all of a sudden, bam, Curious George is either saying something really racist, which has happened in another book, or he's huffing ether.
That's the same with those Tintin stories. There's like every depiction of non-European civilizations is like horrendously racist.
The super exaggerated features like noses.
Oh my goodness. It's painful to look at. Another book that I love actually, and there was a series. Yeah. It was I think a French illustrator named Doller, and there was a book of Norse myths and there was a book of Greek myths. And these were the books that I think really got me excited about mythology. For a while that was like all I was really interested in. And there are these vivid, bright, very colorful illustrations. And I didn't know anything about Norse mythology until reading these books. But there's like these compelling stories of Odin and Thor and Loki and Freya. And it's pretty intense stuff as well. Like Ragnarok and a wolf Fenrir that eats somebody's hand off. And they were adult kind of themed stories. But the illustrations were just so colorful and vivid and exciting that the book really just gripped me.
And you remember those Norse myths to this day.
That's oh, absolutely. And that's the only thing I've ever read about Norse mythology.
And that's all you need to know to understand, you know, movies like that space one with Loki. What's that one called?
The Avengers?
Yeah. Thor. That's the one.
If
you probably went into that movie with a lot more background knowledge than your typical moviegoer.
Yeah, exactly. If you're still looking for a child name, Amy, we were thinking about Thorbert. We didn't actually use it. But there are these sagas, these Icelandic and Norwegian stories where like every character's name begins with Thor. There's like a Thorvald, a Thor Gunner. There's like a million Thors. And Laurel and I thought, what about Thorbert?
Kind of like Dilbert, but with a little edge.
Yeah, because he's both accountant with the last syllable, but Thor with the first syllable. So he's got it all.
Yeah. I mean, if you guys have another kid, I don't want to take that name from you guys because...
No,
Thorbert.
I mean, we're offering it. We're just... It's, we're
giving it to you, Amy. Just accept what you're given.
It's not like there's going to be too many Thorberts in the world. There really can't be.
No. He would own that name.
Yeah. So
what
it's
do
an
you guys,
idea.
this is a somewhat off the topic, but what do you think of like exposing your children to stuff like that, like violent Norse tales? Or like, I'll find myself singing, like a pop song to my girls that I think is great. And then all of a sudden, like, oh, this is about like a prostitute somewhere. Like, what should I be singing then? Do I want to read them this Curious George book with ether in it? Is that okay?
The world's a scary place, and I think exposing them to it through this medium is as good a way as any to learn about it.
Yeah, I agree. I'd much rather it be me exposing that, or me exposing them to it, than some stranger singing
Well,
about
Curious George is
prostitutes.
adorable, so.
That's true. If you're gonna learn about the dangers of ether, I'd want to learn them from Monkey. Yeah, certainly.
Especially when he gets to wear the yellow man's hat, you know?
Yeah, Dave, this is a question that came up in our house actually, because we do these cedar dance parties with our baby. The other day, we played Mystical. There's a song, Shake Your Ass, Show Me What You're Working With. And it's a terrible song. And the lyrics are really offensive and misogynistic and everything. But it's got a great beat. And Cedar was dancing to it a lot. And so, you make compromises for your children's joy.
These are good life lessons, guys.
That's true. If it's got a good beat, then it's okay.
Yeah,
That's basically
nothing
rule.
else matters. Like the new Usher song is just horribly misogynistic, but you just want to dance like crazy when that comes on.
And
Yeah,
that's
that's
all
why
that matters.
we still have the thong song, Cisco,
Yeah,
going on in our
still.
house. It's so good. I have one or two more authors I really want to throw out there. And have either of you guys heard or read something by Mo Willems before?
Yes.
Okay, this.
Is this Elephant and Piggy?
Yes.
We were given one as a baby shower gift. That was fantastic.
Do you remember which one it is? I've read them all still. I collect them like comic books.
How many
No, I
are
don't.
there?
There's probably like 20 of them.
Wow.
So Mo Willems, he does a bunch of different books. Amy, you want to check these out.
Okay.
But my favorite ones are Elephant and Piggy. It's two characters, they're best friends. Elephant's real uptight about everything. His name's Gerald. He's real worried. And Piggy's just this free spirit. And in every single book, they just have this kind of goofy little back and forth adventure. There's one where Piggy gets invited to a party, but she's never been before. And Gerald's got party experience, so he keeps making her like change what she's wearing, put on different costumes, and she keeps wondering like, is this really is he serious? And he's right. In the end, Gerald knows parties, and yeah, they're just hilarious.
And there is
Okay.
a series called Elephant and Piggy, or is it like a different
Yeah, it's just called
comic?
Elephant and Piggy. They're for a little bit older kids, but my girls, they love them. And probably my greatest talent in life right now is I can really nail the Elephant and Piggy voices. Like, no one else in my house can read those books to them because they can
Can we get a little example?
kill. Elephant is just kind of exaggerated my own voice, which is fine. But Piggy's a little bit of kind of. I feel really uncomfortable doing it now on tape. Piggy's just like, "Hey Gerald, what's going on today?" And Piggy's just, or and Elephant's more like, "Yeah, this isn't going well still." But it's Piggy. How are you? Yeah, it's way better when it's me.
You gotta have the script in front of you, right? To get really into the characters, to inhabit them.
Just trust me, I can nail these voices, guys. Just not whenever I'm doing it with you. I'm really
Is
good at
definitely
it.
staying in the episode. Okay, Dave, any other recommendations? Favorite picture books?
The last one, guy named Uri Shulvitz. He had to flee from Europe during World War II. He's a Jewish man, so he's in his 70s or 80s now, and he just churns out so many good books. One of my favorites, he actually won the Caldecott for, I think it's called Snow. And it's just a little boy walking around town, seeing the snow come down. But the way he illustrates it, he uses pen and he uses watercolor. It's just beautiful.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Anything else, Amy, you've got on this topic of favorite picture books?
Well, I really loved, it doesn't fit into today's definition of a picture book. It's BJ Novak's new children's book called The Book with No Pictures. It's literally a picture book without any pictures, and it is hilarious. Have you guys read it yet?
No, I saw it at somebody's
No.
house.
Oh,
And it
it's
said,
so funny. It's really well done. So it's basically makes whoever's reading the book has to say totally ludicrous things that, of course, make the children like laugh hysterically. You should check out, there's a YouTube video of him reading it to some kids, and it's just so charming, just absolutely charming. So it
That
doesn't fit
sounds
quite
great.
in with the picture book definition, but it's definitely like I'm definitely buying that for Thorbert, so
But it doesn't fit into my definition, Amy, so I'm
I
sorry.
know.
Cut that from the
We'll have to
segment.
keep that
That's
out.
gonna get that. Yeah, we'll have to cut that from the segment. Make room
Yeah.
for Dave's elephant and piggy voices.
Can this whole segment just be Dave doing this in the elephant and piggy voices?
Yeah, we're gonna re-record the whole thing. Well, that's great. I think we've got some good ideas. If you're curious about children's picture books, you've got half an hour of audio to review. And if you're not, we're sorry. All right, so small talk. If you're not familiar with small talk, here's the premise. Many times you'll find yourself in situations. We all do. We're at parties, we're in a social interaction, and we just don't know what to talk about. Small talk is not a skill that all of us excel at, and so we're here to help. Each time we do a small talk segment, we provide at least two or three ideas, stories, interesting anecdotes that you can use in the next awkward social interaction. And each week we try to bring you some things that are really off the chain. Dave, you got something to contribute to small talk this week?
I do, Steele. It starts with caves. I think everybody can agree that caves are awesome. So what's the one way to make a cave even better is to actually move into the cave and make that your house. On one blog that I look at occasionally, a guy named Vincey Miklos, I think he's Russian, so I can't actually say his name. He posted just a series of different pictures of people making awesome houses in caves. It's just exciting. There's actually one that's not too far from me in Bisbee, Arizona. You just look on the outside, it looks kind of like a mobile home, but all of a sudden you go inside and you're inside a giant cave. It was built up right against the cave, and it's just exciting. I mean, Amy, what do you think when you think living in a cave?
Well, the first thing that comes to mind obviously are hermits. So were these houses primarily hermit inhabited houses, or are they like families living in caves? And also I'm also curious about permit and zoning. So did he just like find a hole, pull his mobile home up to it and like done, cave house? Because I love that.
The zoning of a cave home, I don't know anything about, but it's a cave. It's stable, Amy. Like, why do you have to have anyone inspect a cave? You go in a cave to protect yourself from the storm, from the outside, or from social obligations that you're not prepared to meet. So it's just a place that you're going to be comfortable. You don't have to bring the outside world into your home because you're inside a cave. There's only one way in and out. There's not a back door. You don't have to have windows even. It's just you live in a cave.
And
Yeah,
it's
there's
always
that
like a
saying.
temperate 58 to 62 degrees in there.
Yeah.
So that's nice.
You go in there and you're comfortable. Maybe you put a sweater on, and outside it's like 100 degrees. But Bisbee, Arizona, you're in the cave, you're loving it.
This is like ancillary to houses and caves, but when we were in Portugal, we went to this place mainly because we had seen a picture on the internet that showed a giant boulder that had been carved out to be a house. So it
Yes.
was a house in a rock. And Warren knows Portuguese, so he's like trying to ask some people where to get there. But no one, we were like, house in rock, like kept repeating that. And so finally I pulled out a napkin and drew this house in a rock. And the taxi driver was like, oh yeah, well duh, and drove us right to this house in the rock. And they were so cool. So I like the idea of living in a rock enclosed thing. It felt very safe.
Yeah, insulation. But this post ends with maybe the coolest one. No, it's not the coolest, but it's the most impressive. It's in China. There's a whole village built inside a really big cave. So
Wow.
they make their little buildings without roofs because obviously they don't need a roof. They live inside a cave. There's like a little playground, a little school. So they took this little idea, like live inside a cave, and just a lot of people got excited about it and they moved in.
How do they do lighting, Dave?
I think it's mostly you're going to go with the natural light. If you're living in a cave, I think you're really tied to the sunshine that's going to go in. Like, you don't need electricity, Steel. Come on.
Okay.
You're living in a cave.
The natural light in a cave is not what I think of as natural light, really, but that's the point of a
Maybe they
cave.
have like fires where they're roasting things on top of.
You're welcome to do that.
No coding, no
But really,
zoning, right?
Anything goes in the cave house.
You're gonna have safety. You're going to have comfort. You're going to have a temperate environment. And if you want to be a hermit, no one's gonna stop you. You're already in a cave. People are okay with it.
Wow.
So that's cave houses. We'll put a link up to just this post because they're actually, some of them are just really beautiful, really impressive what they're doing with these caves.
Well, that sounds
Yeah,
great.
sounds cool.
Speaking of going under the earth, subterranean communities, I think Amy's got a great contribution to small
Oh,
talk today.
well, it's actually not subterranean, but where I live in Michigan, there's this little town called Hell. And it's in every way the like worst kitschy type of tourist trap you could ever imagine, but it's located in like beautiful Michigan farmland. And so
Wow.
you pull up to Hell and there's a sign that says, "Welcome to Hell, you know, Michigan's creepiest place." There's an ice cream parlor called Screams. You can mail postcards from Hell. You can, you know, dine on Hell burgers at the Hell restaurant. You can get married in Hell, which I think is amazing.
Yeah,
It's
that'd be
basically a
fantastic.
church about the size of an outhouse, so people have gotten married there before. And so Hell is like 3 blocks big. It's not a large town at all. But I guess they're putting it up for sale, and I really, really, really want to buy it. Can't remember what the price tag was, but it seemed very reasonable for a town named Hell. But I guess there's this artist coalition called Damned, the Damned Artists, that want to buy Hell and like make it this perpetual Halloween art display type situation. And I'm so jealous because I want to buy Hell just for the sake of saying I own Hell. For Warren's birthday, almost you can become mayor for the day for $100.
Whoa.
So that you can be mayor literally of Hell. Love going to Hell. Every single fall we go to Hell, you know?
You visited
Oh
Hell,
yeah,
Michigan.
multiple times. It's
Okay.
not a one-time visit type place though. You're gonna want to get yourself there multiple times.
So I have a couple of questions that are burning in my mind. First question.
Hellfire burning.
Yes. First question is, was this town founded as Hell, or did it have a name change and become Hell?
Yeah, no, it was founded as Hell, and they say maybe it was the guy's last name, but I think it's just because Michigan's so like horrendous in the winter that it was their version of Hell. There's always a contest every year to see if Hell freezes over, and if they do, a restaurant will give out like free chili the day Hell freezes over.
Wow,
So
so it's
there's
kind of
always like a
black humor.
Hell frost watch every winter, and then you like go get your free chili at Red Robin or wherever they're doing it. It's like so smart. If I was the mayor of a 3 block town, I would definitely do something like this.
Yeah, that is pretty brilliant. Okay, so the next question I have is there a basis to life in this town other than connected to its name? Like, are there people that are just like ordinary farmers and like, I live in hell, but it's not like the defining part of my identity.
As far as I can see, the 3 block town of Hell doesn't have actual residents, but
Okay.
I could be wrong. It's next to a really cute town named Dexter, and so I think a lot of people just like, you know, high school students come and work the ice cream counter, and yeah, I don't think anyone actually does anything in Hell,
So hell's
which
a commuter
I don't know
village
about
kind of
why.
thing.
Yeah, it's more of a commuter Hell.
See,
Oh
I
man.
like this because I think it works really well for small talk because you can go at it from a couple different angles, but you could just be at a gathering and start talking to people, try and raise funds. Like you can talk to everyone like let's get in this together. It can really join people together. Like we can actually purchase hell.
Yeah.
You could
I
also
think
get a
that
degree from Hell, the University of Hell. There's multiple degrees, and they print them out at the general store there, and you can just go home with a diploma to Hell,
Oh
a
man.
graduate of the University of Hell.
I love fake universities. There's one in Madison area. There's a mustard museum, like the world's largest mustard museum, and they sell like sweatshirts and t-shirts for poop on you.
That's so good.
It's good. Fake universities are the best. They're always so good. Okay, this one's gonna serious it up a little bit, 'cause mine always are. But this is a story that I read in the New York Magazine recently, New York Times Magazine. And it is about an enormous Ponzi scheme that recently shook rural Canada. So I'm sure it's been on everybody's radar. Happened in Ontario. The cool thing about this Ponzi scheme is that it was run by a guy named Arlen Galbraith. And Arlen Galbraith was inventive in his Ponzi scheme because it wasn't based on money or really or investments like Bernie Madoff's. It was based on pigeons.
Okay.
It was pigeon
carrier
breeding
pigeons or?
Ponzi scheme, a pigeon breeding Ponzi scheme. So for 7 years, from 2001 until June 2008, Arlen Galbraith ran this thriving company called Pigeon King International. And what they did was they sold breeding pairs of pigeons to farmers, and they guaranteed that they would buy back all the offspring of these pigeons for the next 10 years.
Who's buying these pigeons? Like, what?
Well, here's the thing. He didn't have anything to do with the pigeons that he bought back except to sell them to new breeders.
Huh.
So he was convincing people that he had something to do with pigeons, like he was going to use them for racing, or that he was going to sell pigeon meat called squab. It was going to be the next, like, chicken or turkey. But he didn't have anything to do with these pigeons except sell them to new investors.
Wow.
But the thing that was crazy about this was
That guy's a genius.
he was, in a crazy, strange way. Because the other thing about him was he defended himself at trial and claimed that it wasn't a Ponzi scheme, that it wasn't fake, that it was for real. And the thing was, for the 7 years that he ran this, he never missed a payment. He bought $42 million worth of pigeons from the farmers that he had, and he had obligations to buy like $350 million worth of their baby birds. And he picked up every order of pigeons, paid for them. Like, he never missed a payment. He was running this thing for real. And in his mind, I think he just thought it would grow indefinitely. As long as he could find new buyers, there would always
I mean,
be.
squab definitely became the next chicken, so I see where he's going.
Yeah, so
So
it's just
do you think
crazy.
he do you think he had a plan for the future, or was he was just enjoying the wild ride?
It's unclear. So I think probably he didn't have a very good plan. His plan was to just keep this going. He targeted Mennonite and Amish farmers, and in part, some people speculate this is because they are especially reticent to go to the law or to involve, like, to bring someone to trial or to go to court about something. But
So
for
how did
him,
he
it was,
eventually get found out?
well, there was like a one man kind of army against. He's trying to break up Ponzi schemes. It's called Crime Busters Now. He runs his own website and publishes stuff. He drives around with like a bullhorn and announces that this is a fraud, and like he seems a little bit unhinged. He's like absolutely driven by this desire to out frauds publicly. So he sort of was making noise about this for a while and driving off some investors and making problems, making problems, and making problems. And then eventually the guy got investigated. They realized that he had like millions of pigeons in these barns that he was just not doing anything with, but just selling to new breeders. And it all collapsed. And everybody who had these pigeons basically just had to kill all their pigeons. So they murdered
My
like
gosh.
millions of pigeons.
No.
And it fell apart.
A horrible ending to that story.
Well, no, it
But
didn't end there. It
it
ends
probably
with the
makes
guy
me
going
want
to
to try
prison.
that because
So
it sounds
it gets much
traumatizing.
better, obviously. The Arlen Galbraith goes to prison. So.
So he, when he represented himself, he wasn't able to get himself off, apparently.
Yeah, shocking fact, he wasn't an effective trial attorney, but he did. His cross-examinations are kind of crazy. Like in one of them, he's asking one of the witnesses whether they believe that the suit he is wearing is his only suit. He's like, "This is my only suit. Do you believe me?" And they're like, "Yes, we
The
believe you. Yes." Okay. Like somehow it established his bona fides that he wasn't making millions off this because he only owned one suit. So that's the kind, that was like his Matlock legal defense strategy.
Yeah. That's the one he kept in his back pocket for that special moment in court,
How
that
many
reveal
suits do
moment,
I
right?
own? Yeah. So
That's
anyway,
amazing.
the story's fascinating. It's by John Mooallem, and it was in the New York Times Magazine. We'll put up a link to it. Arlen Galbraith. I'm endlessly interested. So that's my contribution to small talk. Anybody else have anything else they want to add for conversational delight?
So this is something that Warren sent me, and I just want to read you guys a couple of the headline that they decided to put this on the Daily Mail. So first of all, the hook is frog in your throat. Japanese Nature Museum launches frog burgers to celebrate new poisonous creature section. I honestly didn't read this article very closely because it took me a while to figure out, okay, we have a poisonous creature display, and then we're also selling frog burgers. So are they poisonous frog burgers? I don't know. But then the first line into it is hopping mad or totally awesome, like TOAD. I mean, whoever, Becky Pemberton from Mail Online, she's just an artist with words. Apparently, it's this deep-fried frog sandwiched between a bun dyed with bamboo charcoal. So just take a minute and imagine what that might look and taste like. And would you guys eat it?
Is it the entire frog?
It appears to be just without the head. So it looks like it's the body, like the torso and legs, deep-fried, and then skewered onto, like, a burger.
Oh, yeah, I see. Yeah, I'm in.
Oh, wait, no. If you scroll down, the frog burger is literally frog made into like a patty with black cheese and black buns. It looks really disgusting.
But the thing is, Amy, that they it's deep fried.
Right. So that forgives a world of sins, right?
You could put just batter anything up and you throw it in the fryer, you're going to be okay.
I did once, there's a place out here where it's only deep fried food. So we had a deep fried hamburger topped off with deep fried Nutter Butters and deep fried Oreos.
Whoa.
It was pretty, deep fried Nutter Butters. Yeah, deep fried chicken gizzards. They're known for their deep fried chicken gizzards.
Oh, yeah.
But Steele, what about you? I know you don't eat meat, but would you make an exception for the Japanese frog burger?
No, I'm sad. If I did consume animal flesh, I would totally try it. I'd be willing. That kind of stuff I don't think really disgusts me. It's the cruelty of killing in the first place that feels sad. Anyway, wah, wah. My role in this show is to be the Debbie Downer, if you haven't noticed, Amy. Dave was trying to make this all a positive podcast, and all my stories are about like something ending terribly and bad news in the world. And
a giant with flowers blooming out of him dead at the foot of a tree. You know, yeah. The usual.
Just run-of-the-mill children's story. Okay, so that's small talk. We've got frog burgers, we've got pigeon Ponzi schemes, we have living in caves, and of course, we have hell for sale. If you don't have something to talk about at your next awkward conversation, it's your own fault. The thing I'm most excited about today is Ask Off the Chain. If you've got great questions inspired by today's episode, please send them in. You can go to the website otc.teamawesome.org. Submit your questions. This first question comes to us from Hillary in Alpine, Utah. She says, I've recently met and started dating a wonderful man. I've just found out, however, that he sleeps with an ancient E.T. stuffed doll that he had from childhood. Here's the sweet part. It's the exact same doll that I had and loved when I was a child. Here's the not so sweet part. It's in bad shape. Like E.T. can't phone home. Because he has no eyes or discernible features and is covered head to foot in fuzz mold. Can you help?
Poor guy.
My first thought is the guy's a keeper. I slept with a stuffed gorilla till I was 18. I probably only stopped because of a college dorm situation. And you don't want to be the man sleeping with a gorilla in your college dorm. But I think it shows kind of a sensitive soul. It shows that he has heart. He's going to be wonderful with children, Hillary.
Yeah, he'll love things to death, literally. What it sounds like.
That sounds like a Steele-type comment. And
I know, I'm being tasered.
I'm rubbing off.
Well, Hillary, I would say to look into the Stuffed Animal Hospital, which can be found at stuffedanimals.com. And it's just a great place for the low price of $49.95 where you can take your stuffed animal in an ambulance ride. They'll supply the box and postage for this ride. And they'll get the best care and examination as well as just a hospital bracelet with the patient's name. And they'll clean ET right up. In fact, if you go to the website, there's some great before and after pages. It's kind of like plastic surgery before and afters. Where the before shots are almost difficult to look at in their dismemberment of these stuffed animals. For instance, there's a puppy with its eyes gouged out. But after the trip to the stuffed animal hospital, he's got his cute, beady little glass eyes and his hospital bracelet. He'll come back to good as new. So E.T. should definitely give a look into that stuffed animal hospital.
Is this real?
This is real.
It's called Stuffed Animal Hospital, but it's
definitely real. It might be a Ponzi scheme.
I just pulled it up, Steele, and it has a picture of a woman with a stethoscope, so you know they're serious.
Yeah,
Oh, they
and a
have actual
lab coat,
doctors.
so.
That's how I let people know I'm professional when I walk into their room.
Stethoscope?
Hold that teddy bear and that stethoscope.
So where are they based? Can you send your injured animals from all over the globe, or is it only parts of the world
It
they
sounds
service?
like it might just be an American thing. Hillary, if you're in Alpine, Utah, I think they can help you out.
That's fantastic. Thank you, Amy. I had no idea. We've got another question. This is also coming from Utah. This is from Natasha in the sprawling metropolis that is Provo. She writes, "Please advise on how to make food that is both off the chain delicious and off the chain healthy." I thought this was a perfect question for you, Amy. I know you're well known for your culinary skills.
Yeah, I do like to cook a lot. And Natasha, that's a tough combination of things, but I think there's like a couple of simple things you could do. For instance, if I could subsist entirely on French fries, that's what I would do. That's like my food of
Wow.
choice. So rather than deep frying them like delicious frog legs, you could just bake them up. So we like to make something called skinny Texas cheese fries, which is basically all the great stuff you love about Texas cheese fries, but with a baked potato. So it's a
Wow.
little bit healthier, but still has that cheese. It's got the jalapeno. It's really, really good. And then my second tip would be to use a slow cooker because you put anything in a slow cooker and it's going to come out awesome. And it doesn't need extra oils for cooking. And you can make really good soups or like taco meat and stuff like that.
Amy, quick question for you about slow cookers. What do you put in as the liquid or the base? Do you like to season it, or do you like to just let it cook in its own juices?
Yeah, it depends. If it's meat, you mostly just do your own juices. But if it's like a soup or whatever, just put in some chicken stock
Okay.
or veggie stock, whatever you got on hand. But yeah, definitely you're going to want to season it because slow cookers can make things taste pretty bland just because they've been cooking for so long. But yeah, the slow cooker is like my wife. It's my favorite kitchen appliance for sure.
That's great.
And still, you know, I probably don't have any clear answer to this question. My strategy for maintaining a low weight is I only take in calories through liquid like Tang or chocolate milk, and then I just don't really eat. And it's worked really well so far. I'm a pretty skinny guy.
And you're all set for the time when all your teeth fall out. You won't even need to worry about dentures. You're like, I don't care. I'm already on a liquid diet anyway.
Going strong 80 years, liquid diet.
I have a couple of thoughts on this question, actually. The baking thing is a great idea. We've been really into roasted vegetables lately, which are just great. Roasting stuff makes it fantastic. And I think the key for me, we eat a lot of fresh fruits and vegetables. If they're whole foods, close to their natural state, they're pretty much delicious, and it's usually very healthy. But the crucial thing, in my opinion, as a vegetarian, is your seasoning. You've got to have an adventurous spice palate, because once you take meat out of the equation, meat's just such a dominant flavor that when it's gone, you start to taste other things. We love to use curry flavors, both Thai and Indian. We love cumin. We've got onion. You've got garlic. We really like roasted paprika. Just get yourself a nice investment in some good spices, good fresh spices. It goes a long way towards making things delicious and without
Yeah.
ruining the healthiness.
And still, for your vegetarian food, do you find there's like a main vehicle for these flavors, like lentils, or like is there like a go-to base that you use?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think we like mix it up a little bit, but I think onions is what I often do. I'll start a frying pan with onions and garlic, and onions absorb and take spice really well. So I'll almost always toss a little bit of cinnamon with onion, and then you can add cumin or you can add curry powder or whatever, but onions just soak it up. And then that's whatever else you add to it. Onions are my absorbent.
Yeah, that sounds awesome. And I would say just like sneak vegetables into everything. So like if you do smoothies, just throw a handful of kale or spinach in there and you're good to
Yeah.
go.
Great idea. So, Natasha, hopefully you can both eat healthily and deliciously. Here's our last question. This is from Horatio. I live right on the U.S.-Mexico border in the U.S. side, but I go to work every day on the Mexican side. Here's my problem. My favorite restaurant happens to be just across the border from my office, but it's on the U.S. side. They deliver, but not to Mexico because customs is too difficult. It's so tantalizing knowing that the world's best tacos are just a few hundred yards away, but unavailable until I get off work and head back over the border. What can I do?
Oh man, Horatio, that is a conundrum. I love tacos so much. And I don't know if you've heard of something called the tacocopter. This seemed to take the internet world by storm a couple of years ago. And essentially, it's a mini drone that allows you to get tacos delivered right to to your doorstep. Drones occupying the airspace carrying little burrito packets might look ugly, but just think of how awesome that would be if you could just have a taco of your choice, your favorite taco from even Mexico, delivered to your doorstep. So, guys, I was just wondering, do you think this will ever become a reality, or is this too much in the realm of fantasy to ever happen? The taco copter.
I think it's gonna happen. I mean, we love tacos, we love burritos, we love fast food so much, and as we increase in our weight and also increase in our inability to want to do anything, this has gotta happen. Like how I don't understand how this isn't happening already.
And in San Francisco, they have a whole taco copter website. It
Of
just
course
seems a
they
little
do.
dangerous to have all these mini drones flying around. I mean, they could deliver anything to your doorstep, right?
I
So
think that was
it
the
wouldn't just be
idea.
limited to tacos. I think that's the main problem.
Thing is,
The
Amy, like if you
drones.
look at any representation of the future in any film, what we have is a lot of things in the sky. You got flying cars, jetpacks. These things are going to happen. Just as we move forward with our technology, hey, we have to move forward with our safety features as well. We'll have radar, we'll have different things, different people manning safety booths to make sure that everything's going to go okay. Really, this would be just a great boost to the economy. We start having taco copters going everywhere. We're going to have people monitoring these taco copters. You're going to just inject a lot of money into
Oh,
the
yeah.
economy.
It'll create jobs, boost the economy. I only see pluses. Steele, what do you think?
Well, I like the idea. My biggest concern, I suppose, is that I think that these drones or these taco copters may be slightly expensive hardware, and they're delivering a product that may not be quite as expensive. So it may be a bit of a mismatch. Like, I could see drones delivering something a little higher value. Dedicating a couple $100 drone to delivering a few dollar taco burrito, if I were the
But
angel
still,
investor.
can you find anything negative in this concept though? Can you like really look for something to just bring us down with? I want something negative.
I know you're expecting a lot from me. But basically, let's rewind. Amy, what was your question again?
Oh, I just thought if you think it'll actually happen.
Oh, definitely. I think it's a great idea. I'm on board. I've already pledged a couple $100,000 of my future earnings to the project. Let's do it. Is that better, Dave?
I would definitely get a really long-handled net so I can take other people's taco copters for myself.
Oh,
I love that so
no.
much.
So they're not gonna get past me. If there's a taco coming down the street, I'm gonna get that taco.
Yeah.
And then that gives birth to a whole new industry. There's got to be people then defending against the Nets. It's great.
Yeah.
Sounds
I
like
could
a
just
really great
picture.
premise for a movie, honestly.
It does, doesn't it? I can just picture Amy at home. She's got a little alarm system. She's like busy working, doing something else, and the alarm goes off, and it's like there's a taco in the vicinity. So she like leaps up, she locates it on the GPS, runs outside with her long butterfly net, nabs it.
Well, guys, they're gonna make a sequel to Blade Runner. I think this could be it. It's
Blade
good.
Runner 2, Taco Copter.
Yeah.
Or like a RoboCop reboot
Yeah.
with the taco copter. I could see that.
Why aren't we working in Hollywood?
Honestly, with these ideas.
That was Ask Off the Chain. Wonderful answers with some wonderful questions. We're going to bring you some music now. This is one of our favorite parts of the show, and this is the part I've been looking forward to a lot. We've got Unchained Melodies. This is where we're going to bring you some songs and musicians we're excited about. I wanted to start us off this week with a musician who's relatively new to me. This is Caroline Smith. She's got a new album out called Half About Being a Woman, and this is the song Blood Style.
Me and my baby.
caught me totally off guard. I've never heard of her or heard the song before, but with the title, I just immediately was thinking this is going to be dark and brooding and just like weird atmospheric sounds. But then it comes out as just like a nice, straightforward song. It was adorable, really.
A great slow jam with some 70s influence there.
Yeah. And so I don't know as much about Caroline Smith. I know she had a band maybe 5 years ago.
Yeah, Caroline Smith and the Good Night Sleeps. And I really love this new album because, you know, it's just her, and I think she's taken on a whole new influence with diva personalities and things like that. So it's a really fun album. I actually interviewed her when I was that college DJ. Her band came in and did a set for us at the University of Iowa, and they were just so fun in real life as well. And I really admire people who can sound pretty much the same when they play in concert and on their albums. I think that's really magical. And her voice is just so special sounding that I think it's really fun to have seen her evolve.
Definitely. So that was Caroline Smith. Amy, you've got something for us?
Yeah, I have Dom Lanania. She's a Brazilian who lives in France and also plays the cello. So like super multi-talented. She's pretty amazing. I actually heard this on the radio. It was like an NPR interview with her. It's called Yegare.
Me la pasé esperando por ahí, esperando para ir, pero a dónde, no sé cómo saber a dónde ir, qué camino elegir.
How all her songs kind of build upon each other. You start out with that really sweet low lullaby sounding, and then she adds her other instrumentation. And I've also really liked that I can't understand what she's saying. I don't know why, but it just adds another air of mystery.
It's just the melodies that are really catching you because you don't.
Yeah, I think that's really what it is. Also, my tastes haven't changed in like the past 2 decades, it turns out.
Yeah.
I don't know if you guys have noticed that about yourselves, but.
Definitely.
Yeah, this could have been on a mix CD you made for me like 10 years
ago. Oh, totally. 2003, right?
I'm a sucker for cello music. And she's got those breathy, dreamy vocals. And the cello for me, if there's cello on a track, I'm like, yeah, I'll listen to that. So I'm really impressed with her. All right, Dave, what do you got for Unchained Melodies this week?
So, Built to Spill, terrific group. I fell in love with them when I was like 19. So carrying forward 15 years later, I still love them. They're just some of those bands that are just stuck in your heart. It's never going to be gone. As soon as you hear that they're playing something, you just go right back to being 19 again and just feeling so happy that you're hearing Built to Spill play. So they got a new album coming out, and this song is it's pretty interesting. It's called Living Zoo. He does start singing at some point, but the song's cool. Kind of like a little bit of tempo changes, You can tell that they kind of worked with the song quite a bit. The main guy is Doug Marsh, and he's a terrific guitarist, but he never seems to do a solo just to show you that he can do a solo. It always seems to be like a reason or a purpose to it, rather than just like, look at me.
I remember seeing them, you know, like a decade ago, and they're all up there kind of bawling with their beers, wearing cargo shorts. I was like, these guys know how to live, you know? They don't care anymore. They just want to play good music in their cargo shorts. And it was just really, really enchanting.
I still remember seeing them. I saw them twice within a year. It was about 12 months apart. And when they came back, the lead singer was wearing the exact same sweater that I saw them in 12 months before. It was terrific.
Yeah. Maybe he has like a set of tour clothes, and those are the only things he wears on tour.
One can only hope. Amy, you've got a second song for us.
This is off, and this is kind of like my Built to Spill. The Decemberists, I remember I got really into them in high school with all my good friends, and we'd go to all their shows that came out to L.A. One of the best ones was when they just became a marching band and like paraded around the center of the audience, basically. It was so much fun. So they have a new album came out called What a Terrible Beautiful World, and I love the song Low Carolina on it. I probably listen to this on repeat for like an hour at a time when I'm doing like terrible Excel charts. It gets me like, it's kind of hypnotic, I guess.
This is your data entry track, huh?
Right. And it could be yours too.
Thanks.
I am a boy from the high country, and I got a little love for the offering. I come down from the mountain, bow to the sea, and Carolina love, I will carry thee.
And also, whenever I listen to the song, I pretend I'm in an episode of The Walking Dead. It just feels like something that would be on at the end when, like, there's a zombie fight in slow motion and it's just this song. It brings a certain special something to it.
Gonna take you up, gonna take you around. Throw your poor little pant legs while dragging down. Did you crack your leg? Did you skin your knee? In Carolina love, I will carry thee.
I love the Decemberists too. The first mix CD I made for my wife, we weren't even dating. The first song was the Decemberists, and it's been beautiful ever since.
That's tender.
I know.
Also, Colin Molloy came out with a series of young adult adventure books that are really, really good. And they're illustrated by his wife, so they've got those like really quirky, cute illustrations too.
That's adorable.
Yeah.
Well, I was going to play a different song, but since I've developed a reputation as a downer, I need to shake that. I'm not going to play the song I was going to play. I'm going to play something a little bit funkier. I'm going to play a song from D'Angelo. Came out with a new album late last year, Black Messiah. And this is a song called, hearkening back to a previous episode, Dave, you'll like this. This is Back to the Future, Part 1.
Carefree and lucid, you know, just natural, second nature. You know, chilling at the bar. You know what I'm saying? Just hollering. Back on you, ooh, make my listen.
just want to go back, baby, back to the way it was.
I can just picture me driving down the street with my windows rolled down to that song, and like for once people looking at me and thinking like, this guy, he's got it. Like, this guy.
That's the power of D'Angelo.
Yeah, Dave finally gets respect on the mean streets of Mesa.
That's actually the subline on the album. I don't know if you guys looked at it very closely, but...
Excellent. Dave, you got something to close us out for today?
I do, Steele. I love adorableness. So when I was a young man, I would hear this song by the Beatles, and I would think, like, one day I will sing this to my children as I put them to sleep. And Steele, for the past, I don't know, 3 or 4 weeks, after I put every girl in bed and I turn the lights out, I'll sing to them Golden Slumbers by the Beatles. And if I'm about to leave the room and I don't do it, Mabel says, Golden Slumbers! It's just so cute.
Once there was a way to get back homeward. Once there was a way to get back home. Sleep, pretty darling, do not cry. And I will sing a lullaby. I will sing a lullaby.
Oh, Dave. Tears to my eyes. That's too cute.
I got chills right now. Yeah. So do it, Amy. Sing. I mean, you don't have to sing Golden Slumbers, but sing. Sing to your boy. He's going to love it.
Now, do you ever sing it in the Elephant and Piggy voice? Or is it just strictly from Dad?
I just do my best Paul McCartney and I go for it.
Amy, you might appreciate this, but Cedar's lullaby song is Demon Host by Timber Tambor.
Nice.
Every time I put him down for a nap or to go to bed, that's the song we play and sing.
Yeah, I'm so glad you guys aren't doing like Raffy and stuff. You got to teach them young to appreciate good music.
And they will. I mean, of course, they like the kid stuff, but I just don't play it for them because I can't handle it personally. Eventually, they're going to like the Beatles, the Decemberists, because they just keep hearing it. They don't have it. There's not really another option.
Right.
Yeah.
It'll be in their blood.
Uh-huh.
We hope. Okay. This has just gone by too fast. It's been fantastic, Amy.
Well, I've loved being here with you guys.
Yeah,
thanks for coming, Amy.
Agreed. We love to end the show with a passage of book wisdom. Very few people I know as much about good writing or beautiful books as you, Amy. So we're really honored to have you share the book wisdom for this week.
So this is from one of my favorite books. It's The English Patient by Michael Ondaatje. And this is one of those books, it's really, really slow, but super lush and lyrical. And when I read it, it took me a long time to get through because it's so beautiful. I wanted to stop at every passage. But after I read it, I like put the book down and I had this actual thought in my head that said, this is what writing should be. And it was honestly a life-changing moment for me. And after that, when I began writing, you know, my nonfiction stuff, Michael Ondaatje was like sitting on my shoulder, just like guiding me through it. And this is one of my favorite passages from this piece. And it starts, "We die containing a richness of lovers and tribes, tastes we have swallowed, bodies we have plunged into and swum up as if rivers of wisdom. Characters we have climbed into as if trees, fears we have hidden in as if caves. I wish for all this to be marked on my body when I am dead. I believe in such cartography, to be marked by nature, not just to label ourselves on a map like the names of rich men and women on buildings. We are communal histories, communal books." And I just think that's such a beautiful thought when he says it so eloquently. And this is like just one of many passages in the book that reads like this. So if you haven't read it, I would highly, highly recommend reading it.
No, I thought that was beautiful. We are communal histories. Yeah. Amy, thanks again so much. We can't wait to have you back on.
Awesome. Thanks for having me, guys. Bye.
Off the chain. It's off the chain. Welcome to this world. It's off.
I'm a lot more violent in nature since I had babies. I'm on edge. Like, I just want someone, like, come too close to my girl, see what happens.
And you'll just mess them up with your bare fist.
Yeah, I don't need a weapon. People just walk into my house. It's fantastic. Literally, like, a couple weeks ago, a guy on methamphetamines opened our front door and was like, I'm just looking for my family. They're not here, man.